Good evening. Let's call to order the special council meeting board and commission interviews of August 4th, 2025 at 6:01 p.m. The city does not tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. This council meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the council can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to the agenda item being considered by council. If a speaker's comments are not related to an agenda item, presiding officer will rule that speaker out of order. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Location and online meeting details are available on the council agenda. Scan the on-screen QR code or click the language access and translation link on the council agenda to read and listen along in more than 60 different languages. Use the show captions button to view captions on Zoom. First up, City Clerk, may we please have roll call? Present.
Vice Mayor Sell.
Present.
Councilmember Sisson.
Present.
Councilmember Gallagher.
Present.
Councilmember Srinivasan.
Present.
Councilmember Chang.
Present.
Councilmember Lay.
Present.
Seven present.
Thank you. Let's move to our one item. Item 25-0041, Board and Commission Interviews. Is there a staff report?
Mr. Mayor and Council Members, David Carnahan, the City Clerk. Tonight, you're scheduled to interview seven applicants. School Pedestrian Advisory Commission and the Human Relations Commission. Those are the two commissions that currently have a vacancy. For tonight's interviews, you're scheduled for your next meeting on Tuesday, August 12th, to make appointments. This concludes the staff.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, I'll open public comment on this item. Members of the public wishing to address council, please submit a speaker card to the city clerk. Use the raised hand feature now or dial star 9 on your telephone to indicate that you wish to speak. I will call on members of public participating in person first, followed then the city clerk will ask remote participants to unmute and it's your turn to address council. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. I have no speaker cards in the room. City clerk, are there any remote speakers wishing to speak on this item?
No.
Okay, I will close public comment. Council will be interviewing seven candidates this evening. City clerk, are you for our first candidate? Hi, Daniel. Welcome. Good to see you. Let me take a moment to explain the process. Each council member will have a chance to ask you a question. The interview is scheduled to be about 15 minutes, so keep that in mind as you're answering those questions. First up is Vice Mayor Sell.
Hi, Daniel. Thank you for interviewing. So you mentioned in your application that you have experience on the Fremont Mobility Commission. How would serving on our commission be beneficial from your experience from Fremont?
I think it gives me experience from just kind of knowing how these sorts of things work while we're speaking. Kind of the governmental process, Brown Act, and how projects form, but it also gives me kind of a diversity of experience that someone who may have only been involved in city government in Sunnyvale might not have seen. Maybe there's, wow, Sunnyvale does this thing really well. Or here's an idea that maybe, we haven't thought of here. So I think that's kind of, both the diversity and the just experience.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Cisneros.
Hi, Daniel. Thank you so much for applying. It's really exciting when some of our younger residents too get interested in getting involved. And I see that you've been a poll worker in every election since 2018, and you make civic. It looks like you make civic work part of your everyday life. So I want to thank you for that. That's really important. I do want to say that this is one of those commissions where things get hot. There's a lot of energy and emotion behind what the BPAC does, which I think is appropriate given the level that those things that BPAC talks about, things that council talks about, impacts people's lives. So we want you know, my vision at least is to harness that kind of energy and passion to a really productive end where we get really good results. How do you see yourself navigating situations that could potentially become contentious to bring people, like all of these disparate stakeholders together into a more productive end?
I like to think that I'm a very empathetic person, and I can see things from a perspective that's not my own, especially when it comes to bicycle pedestrian infrastructure, because I can see, I think I have a knack for kind of putting myself in other people's shoes from that perspective, given the people who are using this infrastructure, different levels of experience, different goals, different priorities. So I think I can, I think I've done a pretty good job at the advocacy work that I've done in considering, you know, people unlike myself. I'm a very confident cyclist. I'm a very racer. I'm, you know, very confident biking down Lawrence Expressway or Fair Oaks, but I'm also very cognizant too. But then we can build infrastructure that's, you know, all ages and abilities. So when I'm in these sorts of, you know, contentious debates, it I like to think that I can see all sides, and I like to think I'm pretty diplomatic and try to, you know, see what people's priorities are, see what things are important to them, and then take those into account, rather than just having kind of a single-minded vision towards, like, gotta do it this way.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Mellinger.
Thank you very much for applying, Mr. Karpelovich. As you may know, before serving on council, I chaired the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission for 3 years. And one of the things that I observed and spent a lot of time working on is that historically the relationship between the BPAC and city staff has not always been, there has been a degree of tension in that relationship to greater or lesser degrees over. And this has been something of a recurring issue. Can you talk about, obviously you are an engaged advocate for safe bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure, can you talk a little bit about how you work with staff and, you know, how you will deal with the limitations that will inevitably present?
So I have heard similar sentiments from talk to work with that kind of difficult or contentious relationship with staff. In the well over a year that I was in Sunnyvale, I can't say I've experienced that to the same degree as people have made it sound. So I think it, maybe the tide is turning towards, or maybe I'm hoping the tide is turning towards a more collaborative working relationship. But that being said, I have experienced enough projects and gone through enough of these planning cycles to know what the limitations are, to know what the limits of, you know, legal and financial and all these sorts of limitations that we have. So I think I'm a realist and pragmatist when it comes to these things. And, you know, in my heart of hearts, I might say, like, we need to do everything like the Netherlands does, but I also kind of see what our path is toward making improvements that are not, you know, perfect.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Srinivasan.
Thank you. Damien, nice to see you again. Thanks for applying. I really enjoyed reading your application and your very detailed responses. A couple of things caught my eye, and then, for example, you said making it easier to cut through the red tape to make small fixes and improvement easier and faster to implement. But my question is, you mentioned various ways we can make biking safer in Sunnyvale, which I really appreciate. Then you use the word holistic approach. My question is, you haven't mentioned anything about pedestrian. Can you talk about pedestrian improvements we can do to make pedestrians safe in Sunnyvale in addition to bike?
Yeah, so I think pedestrian safety and you know, making improvements for pedestrians is very important. I may be known as more of a cyclist, but you know, walking is, everyone's a pedestrian at one point. No matter if you're, you know, taking transit or even if you're a driver, you're going to be walking from your car, right? So it's incredibly important. I think the sorts of improvements that need to be made are very different from the biking improvements. We have sidewalks in 95% of our streets, right? And those are protected, you know, they're, you know, we already have that. So what we need to be focusing on is safer crossings where we don't have those. And we do have most intersections, but when I ride by and when I walk by, seeing a lot of places that don't have those, or maybe they have a crosswalk on three sides of the intersection, but not four. So you need to go across the street, you need to go, you know, across three times, right? And those are spot improvements. For pedestrians, the majority of the improvements are either spot improvements, so specific intersections, specific crossings. I've seen, you know, new ones, new things being built, like the Hawk, Duane. I go through there pretty often. So more things like that. But back to that holistic approach that you mentioned, the biggest improvement we could probably make to pedestrian safety and bike safety is, you know, managing car speeds, especially on residential and local streets where we can't make, you know, very high dollar cost investments on every single residential intersection and residential street. But we need to, best thing we can do is to make cars go slower, because that makes everything safer, even for drivers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Chang.
Yeah. My question is there any particular infrastructure, bicycle or pedestrian infrastructure we liked that?
Yes, I would say Walnut Avenue. If basically it is the one of the major arterial roads that connects to the BART station. It's big, you know, cross town border. I mean, the equivalent would be like Barrow, you know, Matilda or something. It's a very fairly large, fairly busy. So. Protected elevated bikeways on it, so platform elevated at the sidewalk, island bus stop, so you never intersections, dash style intersections at every crossing. And they've actually been expanding those protected intersections along with the elevated bikeways. Very cohesive, very safe corner, like no weak lanes.
Thank you. Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Lay.
Thank you. And thank you so much for applying. It's really impressive that you've only lived here about a year and have been so involved. I think you were very involved in the last thing, action item that came before council on Tuesday. And so I think you've already got a little bit of a taste of what BPAC does and what the sorts of debates that go on there. I want to piggyback a little bit off of both Councilmember Sal and Councilmember Chang's questions about your experience on the Fremont Commission. In your, what Councilmember Chang already asked, what, you know, what bike improvements that you might bring from Fremont, is there anything in the interactions with or the way that their commission was structured that do you think would be beneficial here? Just the way that, because, you know, different cities use their commissions in different ways. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, they definitely use their commission in a different way. I will say, or I'm impressed that I've been with Sunnyvale staff. Fremont staff are very forward pushing. They are pushing council on to be better instead of the other way around, which is an interesting situation to be in. They use the commission. The commission is the mobility commission, so it's bicycle, pedestrians, drivers, transit users, and disabled representatives. So there's two of each from four disabled representatives. So it's a larger commission and it has a wider focus, not just bikes and pedestrians. I think that's an idea. I don't know how useful it was. The two driving representatives were both, working in their profession, like they were consultants for like traffic engineering companies. In fact, one of my fellow commission members was a consultant that I got to say hi to after presentation. So. It's just very interesting in that way. definitely felt like there were less, the mobility commission meetings were less contentious, just weren't as well attended, and the whole process in Fremont is much more lax. There wasn't this as strict of a study issue process, strict kind of, you know, steps to go through. I like that about Sunnyvale, is that there is a fairly rigid, in a good and a bad way, of getting things through. Makes it very clear how to do it. But I feel like VPAC members here are able to make change happen, to propose study issues, to make recommendations to council that I've seen or listened to and actually paid attention to. And that, I think that's the most important.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll follow up on related to that, but one of the things that you mentioned, which was already mentioned to some degree, is you would suggest making it easier to cut through red tape from it's part of your answer. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what your suggestions are, and also conceivably keep in mind that the role of the commission is making recommendations. It is the study issues and things of that nature. It's that interaction with council, which is critical. So just be interested, or I mean with staff especially, but then it's kind of making recommendations to council. So
yeah,
wanting to know what you mean by red tape.
So I don't know that it necessarily, I think there are small improvements that could be made fairly cheaply, fairly easily, and there does not seem to be as much of a mechanism for that in the way that the study issue process, the timelines that
small changes in what?
I'll say
build projects.
It's a spot change to an existing project, like say once a project has been built, and you know there is, you know, someone, either a feedback member or a council member or a member of the public, makes a recommendation. Hey, like we could tweak this. We could make this a little bit better. Let's, you know, maybe it's like building, like, for example, the Borregas project, which I ride as a member, but, you know, resident of North Sunnyvale, I ride through Borregas and through on the overpass over 101 all the time. There's, like, small improvements there that could be made, like, a curb cut here, and a better painted marking at the intersection there. You know, those sorts of small things that don't cost a ton of money, but it would be silly to make a 3-year study issue out of, you know, repainting one section of a bike lane. It's like, so I think giving staff the budget, giving staff the you know, ability to make small, uncontroversial, you know, changes that they can make dynamically, right? You know, someone can send an email to staff and they can, that's a good idea, we should implement that and get that done next month rather than have to go. That's more helpful.
Okay, thank you very much. So thank you for applying. Thank you for going through the process. Council will be making its decision next Tuesday night, August 12th. You don't need to be present to win, but the city clerk will then get back with you later in the week with the final result. Okay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
City Clerk, we're ready for our next applicant. Sandor?
Yes.
Welcome. I'm Senator Mayor Larry Klein. I just want to first thank you for applying. Let me take a moment to explain the process. So each council member will have a chance to ask you a question. Keep in mind the interview is about 15 minutes total. So as you're answering those questions, kind of use your time wisely. And so first up is Councilmember Cisneros.
Oh.
Can I ask a question first?
Sure.
Should I use all my time or should I save some for the end?
It's usually use all your time, but keep in mind, and you have a clock. Thank you.
It's great to see you. Hi. Thank you for applying. I appreciate seeing another downtown resident out here. What's going on with these kind of things? My question is related to
And you mentioned you've seen our BPAC meetings, and I like to say, so I'll characterize it as BPAC has the potential to get hot, in that some of the issues mm-hmm. that BPAC and then council deal with when it comes to this kind of infrastructure
yeah.
can make people feel a lot of things. This is yeah. really important to people's everyday lives. And so especially this commission, I like to ask people, how do you approach that kind of energy? Like, because we want to use that energy
yeah.
maybe in a very positive way. That could be a really great thing to have enthusiasm about. But how do you work with stakeholders who are passionate? These are yeah. big issues. And then really work through that in order to find the best decision.
All right. Well, first of all, I'd say I agree with you 100% that mm-hmm. people showing up with that kind of passion is actually a really good thing. Somebody actually puts in the effort to figure out that there is a BPAC meeting and go to it and submit questions and go through all of that. Like, that's a fair amount of effort for an average citizen here in Sunnyvale. So, you know, you don't want to blow people off. So I guess the way I would approach it is try to understand what the problem is and what the range of options we have are for the help, right? Because sometimes you can't help, sometimes you can. Sometimes you can try to understand what where they're coming from and see if you can actually open up new options to deal with this kind of stuff in the future. Like, nothing is static. Like, we have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of latitude to steer things one way or another. That's one of the reasons I'm getting involved here, is actually because I have things that I care about and I'd like to understand, you know, what are the levers that we can pull? Like, can these levers be changed? Like, and when you go into a problem or go into a meeting like this, like, you don't necessarily know what they are. You know that you just have a problem, you're frustrated with it, and you want somebody to help you. And step one is listen. So I think try to understand what they want, what the problem is, global, whatever, you know, whatever the appropriate level is. Contact them, right? Get their information so you can follow up. You know, that's one of the knocks I have on some of the procedures we have. Like, I currently have a traffic calming request that is in the pipe and going through it very slowly. And it's like, what's going on? You sort of have to, like, you know, trying to maintain knowledge of what's happening in the process, I think, is very valuable for people who are trying to get something done. So even if you can't do something, like, knowing that, hey, if you went through ABCD and it turns out, well, the city law said, or state law, whatever, you know, greater authority is in control, says you can't do something when you can't do it. But if that's not the case, then you try to see if you can come up with a solution that will actually be good for that stakeholder, as well as any other stakeholders that you may identify who also be affected by their concern.
See, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, next up is Councilmember Mellinger.
Thank you very much for applying, Mr. Dector. Councilmember Mellinger, and I actually chaired the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Commission for 3 years before stepping on to council. One of my major priorities when I was chair was on repairing a relationship with staff that had, you know, broken down. And there has historically been a degree of tension that waxes and wanes between the BPAC and city staff. And ultimately, as the mayor mentioned in his question to a previous applicant, the BPAC is the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission, and there are some real limitations on that role. And there are real limitations in terms of staff resources, policies, et cetera. Can you talk a little bit about how you would work to maintain a constructive relationship with staff and how you would deal with those limitations when they present them?
I can say, I think I got a little glimpse of that. I attended the traffic calming meeting last November, I think. And, like, it was a very interesting perspective because, like, you have essentially the professional management of the city You have our elected council here. Thank you all. And aesthetically, you vote for somebody based on platform is what you hope they can get done, but pretty much everything has to go through the way the city operates, right? Everything has to actually be done by the professional management of the city. So, you know, the first thing you have to understand is like, well, okay, we should be on the same team, right? We want to have shared objectives for the city. So trying to get that sort of bound of basis of commonality, like I'm not yelling at you or trying to like be antagonistic. I'm trying to understand how this works, what our constraints are, manpower or other resources, or legalistic or otherwise, and just see like, okay, the same thing that somebody comes to the EPAC meeting and says, I have this issue. I say, okay, well, about this, or maybe I do, whatever. Go to the staff and say, okay, we have this issue. What do you guys, what do you recommend? What do you think about it? Have you seen this kind of stuff before? And what have our options been? So I guess it's just trying to have a solutions-oriented mindset going and communicating with them, being clear that really value what they do and things wouldn't happen without them, and that I think we can usually figure out a way together to try to make the city better, you know, deal with solve these sorts of things or push things in new directions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Srinivasan.
Hello. Thanks for applying. You have an impressive education background, and then
oh, it took a long time.
I can understand. Thanks for helping LS Elementary PTA. So thank you.
International Night Event 3 years running. I'll see you next year if I feel like doing it again. More work than I think it's.
I like reading your application. You had a suggestion for both making pedestrian and biking safe in the city. Thanks for some of the interesting suggestions. The question I have is, in your response, you say there seems to be a gap between workings and the boards and the practical running of the city.
That's basically what we're talking
about. So, also, you say it's hard to provide feedback in any sort of impromptu fashion. What kind of impromptu?
This is the government. There are procedures. So, like, if you want to attend a meeting, you have to get there on time, you have to fill in a form. Your form gives you 3 minutes, and your 3 minutes means you can talk for 3 minutes, but doesn't really necessarily get any level of inclusivity out of it. And so that's what I mean. Like, it's, you know, Alyssa here has very generously given me her phone number. And so, you know, it's like, hey, I'm trying to do this on my street. What's going on? Right. And so that means the communication is like really amazing, because you can talk to somebody, you can get feedback, and, you know, it's a more informal but easily accessible means of communication. Now, don't expect every city council member to do this, because there's a lot of people who live in Sunnyvale. Admittedly, your district, too. Still, that's a lot of phone numbers. That's basically what I was getting at there. It's like, there's formal processes, but, you know, if you're not familiar with the system, it's kind of intimidating. And so you really have to learn how things work before you can try to make anything happen. And so those opportunities for more informal feedback, I don't know exactly where you get them. Like, I might harass Mayor Larry, back when he was earlier mayor, since at Bean Scene. And like, that's closer to an informal, I guess that's pretty informal. Get on his calendar. It's about the level of formality. But that's a way you can actually communicate, oh, here's some concerns, I'd like to understand how the city works, how does the city think about these things, I have this plain idea, whatever. That's a way to sort of try to make things happen without as much bureaucratic burden.
Good. Thank you.
Next up is Councilmember Chan.
Chan, do I think it's fine? My question is, in your comment, you mentioned that you find obvious pedestrian walk, bike, car dependent style, and you would like to add more pedestrian and bike friendly shortcuts. Can you expand on what you mean by shortcuts?
So I actually took one yesterday, and it was amazing. I bike from my place to Ortega Park, and there happened to be, or maybe like this wide, from one cul-de-sac to the park. Right? And that kind of stuff is really nice, because when you're biking, right, you know, I bike here from my house. I can bike a lot of places because I can be around. And a lot of the ways are not very pleasant, not very friendly to older people or younger people or kids especially, because you have to be very aware of like traffic words, how to bike safely in traffic, because my goal is to get somewhere, but my primary goal is not to get run over. And so that's where like more connectivity, I think, would come in. I don't think this would be easy. It probably would involve property rights, and that makes it a pain. But I think it's something that's very valuable. Now, like going to this park, okay, yes, I had to bike on El Camino to get there, I had to bike on major roads to get there. But if you live in a community nearby and you want to get to that park, if you go down a cul-de-sac, which is going to be pretty quiet, and ordinarily those are designed that like only people on that street can go there. But if you have that kind of a path, that means that, well, okay, you're not going to want to drive it. So it keeps that kind of traffic out of the neighborhood. But if you want to walk to a park, bike to a park, that makes it, you know, that's something I'm comfortable taking my kids on. Like, I bike my kids to and from school, and it's kind of nerve-wracking every time. And, you know, I'm here, I think, is there even a way I could, it's here, that I would be comfortable with? You know, without having to be comfortable, meaning relaxed. And it doesn't exist. So that kind of connectivity is one way to address it. And I think it's really nice because you can shortcut things. It means also to get to that park rather than driving. If you live on that cul-de-sac, now you can just walk there. Right? Because previously, you might have to go 3/4 mile to get to the park. Another example. Yeah, there's also a friend of mine who lives over in a similar neighborhood, and they have maybe a 1/4 mile walk from El Camino, shop, restaurant, whatever, except that it's basically up against the back of Tesla, and this relates to another plan that I saw to do the turn creek into a bike pedestrian path. But because that's essentially blocked off by all the commercial real estate, you can't go there. And if we can get around that, like this stuff would be really nice. Just if somebody bikes a lot, it's like, you know, my ideal bike route is something where I never touch the handlebars. And I live in places where I can do that.
Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Lang.
Hi, thank you so much for applying, and thank you for organizing the International Night at Nellis. I came from the school board, so I tried to go to that the last couple of years, and it's always such a fun thing, and it's great seeing the families there. And you talked a little bit about bike parking, and I just want to say that that is a thing to talk to the school board about, like talk to the principal and talk to the school.
I do talk, but you know, there's similarly working with the city, right, where I don't have any leverage with the principal other than
I think it
being
would be
a nice guy.
Yeah, so the principal or the school psychiatrist. But actually, to get even back on track, you talked in the same area of your application, you talked about enforcing speed limits on e-bikes. Could you talk about that? Is that something that you see as a problem currently, or something that...
It's a problem sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're on Evelyn, who cares, right? As long as somebody does it safely. But you know, anytime you have a mixture of speeds, you have problems. So if you have somebody going, if you have cars and bikes, well, okay, you have to separate those unless you're on a slow street. If you have bikes and pedestrians, you either need to separate them or you need to have etiquette. And so generally the place that I see a problem is like a lot of e-bikers haven't biked a lot. and they don't know bike etiquette, like don't whip past somebody because you don't know you're coming. Right? So you shouldn't be passing people at 25 miles an hour, whether they're on a bike or whether they're walking, because just the relative speed is really being the main factor there. So in practice, the main place that is annoying personally for me is on Stevens Creek, which I don't think we have any that's over not due. But if we do have, we have shared use, having speed limits on e-bikes makes a lot of sense to me because it just makes it more pleasant for the other road users. You know, it's like, hypothetically, bicycles are supposed to be capped at 50 miles an hour on a lot of trails, which makes sense to me. But even when passing, like 15 miles an hour speed limit. So just having that in mind, like a bike can go so much faster that it just sort of makes a dangerous and less pleasant environment for users.
Thank you.
I'll do a very quick question. You talk of good to see that 50% of your commutes have been on bike.
Something like that.
What is the worst part of your commute in Sunnyvale? What has been historically?
Oh, I mean, just Evelyn. I mean, Evelyn's actually not that. It used to be, because I changed employers while I worked here. I used to work over closer to Moffitt. And then I would go down Maud, because you have, if I'm biking to work, everybody else is also going to work. And that's the worst time to be out there because everybody's in a hurry and not really thinking about you and always thinking that they can get there in turn before you get there. And so it's actually pretty dangerous. You have to be very cognizant of what's going on.
Okay.
I think the solutions for that is separation, or, you know, it's very difficult when you have a lot of entryways and exits.
Okay. Thank you. And Vice Mayor?
Hi. Wow, you have an extensive resume, application. But in all of what you've done, what organizations or experience do you think is most relevant that you could bring to this mission role?
Sure. I don't know how much data I'm going to be working with. So I think probably more likely, when I was in grad school, I was also a community associate. It was a mix of a social coordinator, but also sort of representative of an area of graduate housing. And so we would often do things, and then you're working with the university administration, you say, okay, we want to do something. You have to manage the different stakeholders. On one side, you have students who might have certain interests or certain objectives. A lot of this stuff is like more social or fun-based. But in terms of managing stakeholders, like, okay, now we have to communicate to the people in charge of the school, what we want to do, why we want to do it, why we're going to be okay and safe and responsible, and then prove out you would up your side of the bark. And so I think being in that intermediary position would be have some analogs here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chandra, thank you for going through the process tonight. Council will be making this decision next Tuesday night. You don't need to be present as far as that's concerned, and the city clerk will get back to you later in the week with the final results.
Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you.
One way or another, things are going right now. Even if I don't get this, you both good work.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
City clerk, we're ready for our next applicant.
Hello, residents. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good to see you all.
Anjali?
Am I standing? Am I sitting?
You go ahead, you're sitting.
Okay.
No reason, yes. Have a seat.
Thank you.
Let me take a moment to explain the process.
Yes.
Each council member will have a chance to ask you a question. And we have 15 minutes to answer that. So you have a clock next to you to just kind of guess. But keep that in mind as you're answering those questions. That should stay within about 15 minutes. And first up is Councilmember Mellinger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and thank you very much for applying. One of the things I saw you called out in your application that I thought was very interesting, under major equity challenges facing the Sunnyvale community, and I'm going to actually cite two or three of these because I think they're all tightly related.
Sure.
Inclusive and equitable land use planning, systematic inequalities in housing and economic opportunities.
Can I interrupt you for a sec? Are we talking about Human Relations Commission today or planning?
Yes. This is Human Relations, yes. But they are listed specifically on the human, on equity challenges, but inclusive and equitable land use planning, addressing systematic inequalities in housing and economic opportunities, and promoting social cohesion and community housing. Can you talk a little bit about what your vision is on how you would like to see the city improve in those areas?
Sure. So the responses were more from the Planning Commission perspective, but when it comes back to human relation perspective or angle, having equal opportunity at least to everyone who are residents of Sunnyvale. And that means the blockers could be something as simple as language issue. I'm not able to understand what the rules and regulations are. Even if you are a renter or you want to become a renter or a owner, in that case, something as simple as the language barrier could also become, you know, a big challenge for that person who wants to call himself or herself as a permanent resident here in the city of Sunnyvale. So from that perspective, solving those small challenges, small barriers, and providing some sort of platform so that those barriers could be easily addressed is the first thing that I think would be a big leap in, you know, making someone feel welcome in the city. And when I think about language barrier, Sunnyvale is a home to diverse population. So from that perspective, that was my thought process there.
Absolutely. Thank you. And this is the Human Relations Commission, but one of the things I've said before and I believe strongly is that there is a land use angle, Human Relations Commission. And that those issues do touch on equity, and while they are not the Planning Commission, I do think that it is a voice in some. Thank you.
Thank you for asking me the question and the clarification.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Srinivasan.
Panjali. Hi, Modi. Hi. Thanks for applying.
Thank you for giving the opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks for serving on the County Human Relations
Human Rights Commission.
What are the lessons you can take from that commission if you are chosen as Human Relations Commission Commissioner of Sunnyvale?
Focusing on local issues would be and should be the first priority. We end up talking about issues which directly do not impact all the residents. And sometimes because of that and the time constraint that all of us have, we might end up or sometimes end up giving less importance and less value to the local issues. So my biggest takeaway would be to focus and prioritize local issues that impact directly the residents of the local city or the county for that matter. And if there is a say for the county or the commissioners or the supervisors in national or international issues, yes, give them the priority, but not giving less precedence to the local issues. Prioritizing is important, and that is my biggest takeaway.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Chang.
Hey, Angela, thank you.
Hi.
In your application, you mentioned your experience advocating for marginalized communities. Could you expand a little bit more on your experience?
Absolutely. So, throughout my life, I have been, again, I shouldn't say throughout my life, but ever since I became to an age where I can take my own decisions, since then I've been working for multiple different nonprofit organizations. Currently, I serve as a joint director for a nonprofit organization called SEVA International and an associate director for the program called as Doctors for SEVA, which is kind of Doctors Without Borders. I'm not a doctor by profession, but I lead that program for that organization. And because of that experience, I have, I can give an example during COVID time. Seva International in Bay Area was able to support first responders and anyone and everyone by donating 100,000 masks in Bay Area alone, without checking the background, without asking what, you know, race, religion, nationality you are from. We served anyone and everyone in Bay Area who wanted and who were needing those masks back then. So serving marginalized communities, serving first responders, during COVID times, again, food was biggest issue because people were losing jobs left and right. So we partnered with the U.S. Agriculture Department, and for almost 6+ months, picking up food and then distributing to the marginalized community, I was personally involved in that project. So going to the low-income housing communities, going to the refugee communities and distributing the food packets there was something that I was directly doing, not just the mask. So working with the underserved community, right now as a part of non-profit organization, we run school intervention program in 3 cities, Newark, Livermore, and in San Jose, it's under discussion. So just this week, the report came out for the Newark city at how much that program has helped the underserved kids. So these are few of the examples that I can provide of me being involved firsthand in the projects that affect positively the underserved and the marginalized. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Legg.
Hi, thank you so much for replying. Can you tell me real quickly how long you've been on the County Commission?
This is my 3rd year.
Okay, so not during COVID, but after you stepped in during COVID. And
post COVID,
stuff,
yes.
The stuff you were talking
at
about.
At the Human Rights Commission, yeah.
Sure. Yes. And the things you were talking about right now. Position that was just.
Yes, this was purely from the nonprofit organization that I'm part of.
Okay, thank you. That was just a quick question. And sure. Sorry. You talk about a meeting that you have attended, a city council meeting, and you talked about the increased accessibility. Some community members face barriers in participating, such as limited time for public comment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about that, and if you could expand on that. Was that one of the times when we deliberately limited the time of public comment, or was this like a translation issue, or if you could just...
Translation issue,
okay.
If I remember right. And I have been on the county as Human Rights Commissioner, so I know how the decisions are made on how much time should be given on what topic.
Mm-hmm.
Usually 1 minute, 2 minutes, or 5 minutes is given mm-hmm. to every participant
mm-hmm.
to express their views.
Mm-hmm.
But as others are on the, if I'm sitting on the other side, and if not, and if I'm not a commissioner,
mm-hmm.
as a citizen, I feel that urge to be able to express myself. And sometimes I'm not able to express in 1 minute or 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then providing some platform or some sort of mechanism where if you are not able to finish what you want to say, write us, write to us and finish or express what you really want to express. That type of mechanism should be there from, from the beginning. And that is something I would really like to emphasize on or suggest as a change, even if I'm not part of the commission, yet to make that change to from the get-go. Let the citizens know, let the audience know that if you're not able to talk for whatever reason, there is a platform, there is a way you can reach out to us. And there is a way, but emphasizing and sharing that over and over and over again, so that it becomes a muscle memory for the citizens also. And they feel that they are heard always. That is what I meant.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm up next. First, thank you for your efforts for both the Human Rights Commission as well as on SEBA.
Thank you.
Yeah. So focusing on kind of breaking down those barriers, we have a very diverse community. And one of the things that you said in your application is making it more transparent from a decision-making process for council, what we're doing. And I'm assuming for the commission recommendations, what do you see as non-transparent, just trying to get a better view?
Laying down the rules and regulations in black and white is the easiest thing to make anyone feel that just because the decision was made, what was the criteria of decision, making process? If it's not in black and white, and if you leave someone to, if it's verbal, that can cause confusion. If it's 10 people committee and then one person, okay, let me rephrase. How can I make the, you know, process overall to include transparency? Make all the rules in black and white. Publish them in advance for whatever decisions you are making. If someone is approaching you for a policy recommendation or a policy change, or if someone is approaching the commission for a event that they have to, you know, celebrate in the community, or if a change in the road sign, if there are rules written in black and white, and if they are published somewhere, then nothing is left upon the interpretation of the individual or the organization. To me, something left upon interpretation or verbal communication causes more confusion. And I feel as much as possible, if we can publish things in black and white in advance, proactively, not reactively, that will yield better results, making the community feel that they have heard, and the same process and the same rules and regulations apply to everyone. Instead of, if it's not in black and white, things are left upon interpretation that, oh, maybe because of this, the decision was made, or oh, maybe it was interpreted in this manner or that fashion. So to me, transparency is black and white.
So I'm hoping, and I'll take this offline at a future date, but, you know, I'm hoping that if you take a look at kind of our proceedings,
mm-hmm.
you know, our staff reports are very detailed, both from a commission standpoint and a council standpoint.
But both are sometimes reactive. And I'm talking about proactive, making rules, regulations in black and white proactively for the charter, for the year. That way, everybody knows what are the requirements. If I have to make a suggestion, if I have to take a permission, what are the requirements? It's all known well in advance, so that there is no, you know, finger pointing also for that matter. Okay. Hey, I didn't know this, and now I don't have this. Finger pointing will also not happen.
Next up is Vice Mayor.
Hi. Thank you for interviewing and all your background. You mentioned that your experience on the Human Rights Commission, you bring a proven track record of collaboration, community engagement, and you think some challenges that we have in Sunnyvale is promoting social cohesion and community building. What are, say you're on the commission, what idea would you have as something?
I was so prepared for this. I was prepared for this question.
That was good.
Again, I hope that all the responses and the comments that I wrote in my application does not mean that the city or the commission is not doing great. This itself is a testimony that you are taking interviews, they are fair, everybody's interviewing. And the commission was formed, I guess, 3 years back. At least I know Human Relations Commission is pretty new. So kudos to the city and kudos to all of you for taking the effort and listening to the feedback of the citizens. Coming back on what more we can do to make it even better, right? So as a citizen, conducting, say, for example, more town halls. In my street alone, few of the folks know that I'm part of the county and Human Rights Commission. And because of my SEVA involvement, I have little better reach is what my few folks in the street thinks. But when they face challenge, and this is first-hand experience I'm sharing, my next door neighbor wants a stop sign in the street, the opening from Matilda to Suzanne. And she approached me that how do I convey this to the city? What are the processes in place? Or what is the, you know, how do I reach out to the city? So having more town halls, making this more approachable, letting the citizens know that these are the, you know, ways, forums, and communication platforms for you to reach out to the city. I know these are public meetings, but does everybody know that these are public? Can we make more neighborhood, you know, initiatives? Could that help? Like, you know, doing events at the neighborhood level, having some liaison responsible for example, in the nonprofit, we have a small, in local language, we call it a Gatapata system, but what it means is having small group leader, and group leader has the responsibility for these 10 homes. So for if that message has to go to these 10 homes, my point of contact is that. So can something be done, you know, from the council commission perspective so that more pockets are aware of these platforms and they feel more approachable or reachable to that mechanism? That is one thing that I can think of.
Thank you.
In town hall mechanism.
Thank you.
Thank you. And lastly is Councilmember Sisnets.
Hello. Thank you so much. And about three of my questions have been asked, but I had so many that there's still some more. So I picked the ones that of those. I just wanted to compliment my colleagues on asking really great questions and for you for giving such thorough answers. You talk about community outreach and you have experience with community outreach. You discussed that a little bit with PPE and working with your nonprofit to do that. And you also say that you, on the commission, you would establish stronger relationship with diverse communities, specifically those who are not as involved and underrepresented in the city. I would love to hear, because this is a key piece. I actually introduced the study issue that created the Human Relations Commission.
Oh, wow.
This was like 5 years ago. It started 3 years ago. It takes a little while.
Yeah.
But this is one of the big things, right? It is getting people involved. And having those voices in the city. So you really got to the heart of it there. What are those groups? Who are these people who are not being heard? And how are you as a commissioner going to go and reach out to them and bring that involvement?
Who are those people who are not being heard?
Mm-hmm.
You would be in much better position to answer that question than me today. But if there is a community that feels is not being heard, in that case, what as a commissioner, one can do, or for that matter, even as a citizen. When I talk about my rights, I also should talk about my responsibilities. So if a certain group or a certain individual feels not included, as much as it is a responsibility of the elected officials and the commissioners, it is also a responsibility of a citizen to make person feel inclusive. And by how can we do that? Maybe by arranging again more events which are inclusive, and not focusing on celebrating something for one community. 4th of July could be a very good example. And we are doing that already in the city, where we call Veterans Day. We are doing that in the city, but are everybody participating in those events? And if not, is the information not going out? Or if there are other challenges, we can start from something as simple as making the information available to the folks so that they know the events are happening, so that they know there are platforms. I feel that sometimes citizens are not aware of the platforms and the events, and also hence can feel not inclusive, right? So taking, like double clicking, double boiling onto making sure that the message goes out about such events, such initiatives, could be the first step. And arranging more of such events and such initiatives could be, you know, the follow-on steps so that the community feels that not one community is given preference over other, and the events are celebrated across all communities, making something sound more inclusive so that the messaging is right. It's all about, I guess, messaging and informing the community also sometimes. Things are happening but are not talked about. So at least highlighting and double clicking on that, and then taking the feedback by initiatives like neighborhood town halls and taking the first-hand feedback from them and accordingly making changes would be my approach.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. Rajali, thank you for going through the process tonight.
Questions.
Okay. Final decision will be made next Tuesday night, August 12th.
Okay.
And the city clerk will contact you later in the week with final results.
I appreciate everybody's time and asking me questions going through my application. In again, 100% honesty, I want to double click that my responses in the application and today was to only make this process even better. That doesn't mean that the process is not good today. Thank you for all of you for your service.
Thank you
all. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
City Clerk, we're ready for our next applicant.
Yeah, I'll see you.
No.
Good evening. Hi, Yale. I'm Larry Klein. I'm mayor of the city. Let me take a moment to explain the process. We have about 15 minutes for the interview. Each council member has a chance to ask you a question, so keep that in mind when you're answering those questions. And first up is Council Member Srinivasan.
Thank you. Thanks for applying. Thanks for volunteering, introducing girls and women in STEM education. That's very impressive. Thank you for doing that. In your application, you talk about tackling the systematic barrier that keeps many residents from feeling fully belong and can thrive here. What are the systematic barriers you're observing in Sunnyvale?
Can you repeat it? Badly, the systematic barriers that...
So basically, what do you think the major equity challenges? That was the question.
Mm-hmm.
In that you wrote, tackling the systematic barriers that keep many residents from feeling they fully belong or can thrive here.
I think I can answer that question in two ways. The first way, you know, in the context of what you mentioned, like women in STEM, et cetera, right? Sunnyvale is a very, very tech-heavy city. And in my day-to-day, it is very easy to see the people who work in tech or like that part of the bubble. I belong to that part of the bubble. And the people who do not work in tech and who, you know, serve these very, very critical, you know, pillars of our society and do jobs that are, you know, are more important in many ways, like, you know, teachers and caregivers and service providers and, you know, everyone who is a member of the community. And as, you know, I was thinking about the Human Relations Commission and watching, you know, some of the recordings actually to kind of understand a little bit better, I realized that there are more members of the community that I do not engage with, you know, as much as I should, and that I would like to, and that we could kind of create that connection, and I could help, you know, these members of the community, both by sharing my experience in, you know, this particular path, which is a thing that I have expertise in doing. I also do that, you know, an advocate within my workplace, but also in kind of creating that connection and making sure that all residents, you know, have access to the same opportunities.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Council Member Chen.
Hi, Al, thank you for applying. In your application, and right now, you've mentioned you've seen a few of the meetings. What types of programs or events would you like to see the Human Relations Commission work?
This is interesting because it's not something, again, I'm super familiar with, so this has been a learning experience for me. For instance, one of the events that were discussed was an event that took place last year in which people who have immigrants were kind of, you know, sharing their experience in roundtables and so on and kind of creating connection, you know, between members of that community. And that sounded like a very beautiful and engaging event that resonated with me a lot. But coming up in October, right, there's United Against Hate Week, right? So the most recent meeting was discussing what we could do in the context of this and how to build the success of that previous event and take it forward. So those type of, another thing that Ananda mentioned, for instance, was also connecting seniors with younger members of the community, which was also something that resonated a lot and I think would benefit both the older and the younger. These were some of the events that I thought through, but I'm sure there are.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Lay.
Thank you so much for applying. And I saw that you volunteer with Project Cornerstone program.
Yeah.
My husband is at my son's school on the north side as well. I want to talk a little bit about what you said in the two things you said for addressing equity, taking a hard line against hate. And then the second of those is tackling the systemic barriers that keep many residents from feeling like they fully belong and can thrive. That's something that was addressed previously. And those are, I'm sure you know this, very high level problem. So when we look at those problems, what are some of the ways that you think we can like break that apart into pieces and in your role as a human relations commissioner that help tackle some of these things?
Again, I will answer that in two ways because there's the personal way that has to do with hate for me, and you know, the members of the council might be familiar with that. I'm a member of the Jewish community. Ever since October 7th, right, there's been an increase in the tone of the discourse, right, and the level of communication, right, an increase in hate crimes against the Jewish population. So that's what my very personal angle in having those, conversations and making sure that I'm able to represent and speak on behalf of the Jewish community. But again, the second part is the part where I learn, for instance, where one of the things that I think was discussed in a prior council member was the rapid response team and, you know, how members of, and it's, of course, this is something that, you know, I follow on the news with general knowledge, but it is different to see how it applies, you know, to members of the community. And so, for instance, the Santa Clara rapid response team gave a presentation on how to help communities, you know, protect and stay safe and so on. That would be an example, for instance, of a barrier or a challenge, right, that people in the community might be experiencing that I was not previously familiar with and, you know, would like to be aware of an effort. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm up next. In your job, you talk about mentoring product managers from diverse and underrepresented backgrounds. How do you think that that would help you, or how would you use that experience in the Human Relations Commission?
I think this is a little related to the answer I gave to Council Member Srinivasan, but there are two things. Okay, sorry, I feel like I'm doing two things. Maybe I should do three. But when talking to people, they are not aware that the opportunity exists. Right? This is thing number one. Like, make people aware that the opportunity exists and that it is in within their ability to aspire to this opportunity. Thing number one. And thing number two is once the opportunity has been given or you are kind of beginning, how to compete on an even playing field, how to act or respond with the confidence and the expectations that will help you rise, that are not always obvious to people. They're not, certainly not obvious to many times women who are like kind of more reticent to advocate for themselves. But also people from underrepresented communities or people who work very hard to get to a certain position may not be willing to speak up. And by sharing the experience of here is how the system works, here is what you need to show. You need to show up in this way. Here is how to be visible. Here is how to present yourself. Here is how to carry yourself. I feel that I'm able to lift up these candidates and help them, you know, acquire the skills themselves.
Very much. Next up is Vice Mayor Sell.
Yeah, thank you for interviewing. I'd like to see how people's experience, what they can bring to this commission. And you mentioned my background in project management has trained me to listen closely and build consensus and turn community feedback into concrete, measurable outcomes. If you were on the commission, what might you think about in terms of an idea that leverages your background in project management?
That's a very interesting question. I think what I see in product management many times is that companies or users ask for something. They're not always asking for the exact thing. So for instance, they might say something like, I need you to do X, but it's actually coming from a different need. The different need is that there is a problem. The problem can be addressed in several ways. So I think it is the ability to hear the feedback and listen to it and understand what the needs of the community might be, and then think creatively with them in a collaborative way about different ways of addressing these concerns, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Cisneros.
Hello, thank you so much for applying. I really enjoyed reading your application. I think that you really showed a very deep understanding, as you mentioned, the Jewish community and come from that, very transparent about it, which I agree. But you also showed a really good broad understanding of the kind of things that our community is concerned with. You mentioned LGBTQ rights, English not being a first language, immigration not, citizenship, et cetera, with so much going on. Talked about it a little bit. So much going on the national level, where there may be laws or policies that this city council certainly is not responsible for, but we may have to respond to those things.
how, and sometimes it feels, it's so overwhelming. You know, I think anybody who looks at the news on their phone can feel that overwhelm. How do we address that in the community? How do we respond in a way to things that are so rapidly changing?
That's a very interesting question. I empathize with what you said about feeling overwhelmed. I feel like that happens every day. I wonder if by joining this council, it's a way to answer a little bit of the overwhelm, because it is possible to create a space to address some of these issues. So for instance, I think the rapid response is actually a very good and actionable example for this, right? In which there are directives given at the national level. These are things that we cannot, you know, perhaps fully control, but within our community, we can put processes in place to protect, you know, LGBTQ rights and to protect, you know, immigrants and to make sure that people can do their jobs and live their lives and, you know, just do that with, and perhaps like provide a little bit of an umbrella.
I really like that approach. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Mellinger.
Thank you very much for applying, Ms. Grossman-Levy. So you mentioned in your application both the specific issue of the rise of anti-Semitic incidents as well as the general issue, contextualizing that as part of a broader increase in hate crimes and hate incidents. And you specifically talk about taking a hard line against hate through stronger meeting civility rules, better incident reporting, visible solidarity campaigns, keeping in mind the very strong limitations that the First Amendment places on the city and on our ability to limit speech. What steps do you think that the city should be taking to combat these issues?
I actually think the city did a really good job working through these issues during the past year and so on. It was a very, it still is, right? But the issue, it is still a very hard line to toe between like self-expression and restricting that. This is not a thing that we want to restrict, again, given the First Amendment. But for instance, if I recall correctly, and you know, there was a time where people were taking advantage of the Zoom comments, right? They were just calling in and leaving, you know, hateful comments, and the city listen, no, we can cut you off. You don't get to say whatever you want in this case, because what you're saying is not an expression of free speech. It is an expression of hate. That's not a thing that we do. So, for instance, the measures that were taken, that in this case, you know, the speaker can be cut off, is actually a very productive measure in my mind. And I think those types of measures are things that we would want to think through, right? Not the restriction of people's right to speak their mind and to speak their truth and represent their point of view, but ensuring that this is done in civility, with courtesy, and with mutual respect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I just want to thank you again for going through the process. Council will be making its final decision a week from tomorrow, so Tuesday the 12th, and you don't need to be present to be chosen. But the city clerk will then get back with you later in the week with those final results. But thank you for doing this tonight.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure, and I feel like I've learned a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.
We'll take a 5-minute recess. I'm back at 7:20. Thank you.
We have 10 minutes.
falafel shop, right?
City clerk, we're ready for our next candidate.
You see, when I get to recycle that. Yeah, exactly.
Hi, Ari. Good to see you. Let me take a moment to explain the process. Mm-hmm. Each council member will have a chance to ask you a question. We have about 15 minutes to go through all the questions, so keep that in mind when you're answering them. And first up is Councilmember Chang.
Right, Anna, thanks for applying. In your application, you mentioned you're a renter and you'd like HRC to address the imbalance of renters being underrepresented in by advocating for policies. Can you speak a little bit more about what type of policies?
Yeah, I think not so much policy, although that is important. I think one thing that the Human Relations Commission can do is we can actually go out into communities through neighborhood associations, through renters associations, things like that, to try and connect with renters who might not otherwise feel necessarily tied to their community because, you know, if rent changes, it might force someone to move out of their community. And so as a renter myself, you know, Sunnyvale is home. I grew up here, moved back here after college, but it's unfortunate because if things get too expensive, I might have to move. So my thought was one way the Human Relations Commission can address that is by getting in direct contact with constituents.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Lay.
Thank you so much for applying. I think your background in public advocacy and public service are so admirable, and thank you for all that you've done in your various positions. I was in a place and then I scrolled. Sorry, can you come back to me?
Sure.
I listened to a question.
No problem. So I'm up next. Thank you, of course, for your public service as well as dealing directly with constituents.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about, you know, one of the things that you talked about was proactive outreach strategies. And so you've seen that from like constituent services level. What do you think Sunnyvale should be doing more? You've been part of the community for a while to reach, let's say, often unheard portions of our community.
Yeah, so I think, again, like I mentioned earlier, proactive outreach, I think putting a more forward-facing approach on the Sunnyvale website, specifically on the Human Relations Commission website, it looks like, you know, you've published the work plan, but there's not a lot of specificity to the work plan. And I think really going into detail as to what the commission is working on is one way that myself as a constituent, I would really appreciate. And I would imagine that those, you know, in our community would also. I think reaching those who are kind of not always well represented in our community, I think, again, there's ways to reach out to constituents, whether it's through schools, through you know, neighborhood associations, different various organizations that we can go out and we can, you know, let people know that these resources are available to them and we're looking to try and create a more inclusive, equitable community for all, and we want their feedback.
What have you seen from your constituent outreach in your other positions done specifically that we aren't doing? And I understand you kind of listed some of that.
Yeah. You know, I think one thing I love working for government and government is we are in a position to connect people with, you know, in some instances, life-saving resources and services. And I think that, again, just to reiterate, the biggest thing we could do is, you know, reach out to people who are underrepresented and provide those resources. Okay. And that could look like, you know, providing them in various languages.
Okay. Councilmember Lang.
Hi, thank you so much. And thank you for coming back to me. I wanted to ask about you had a specific observation about observing the Human Relations Commission. I think you already touched on this to your answer about it lacking specificity. Is there something specific that you would like the Human Relations Commission to be working on, some ideas that you have for going forward, adding to the work plan or study that you might?
Yeah, so as it was mentioned, I mentioned in my application, one issue that is important to me is representation for renters. I think that there is room for commissions to work together. I don't know if it would be considered an ad hoc committee or what have you, but there's ways that we can work together to address multiple issues. You know, renting is something that I believe really impacts marginalized communities and is something that could really use our attention. I think that's one way that we could really address it, and we could go into more depth through the website and the workbook as to what that might look like. And again, to touch on what I've done, going out into the community, speaking with constituents and letting them know what resources are available.
Do you see that as role of the commissioner or something that you want staff to be doing more?
When you say staff, do you mean staff?
Planning those cities.
You know, I think that it relates to the Human Relations Commission in that right now there are a lot of people out there who are afraid to reach out to government, are afraid to reach out to various resources because of what's going on at the federal level, and I think that chances are these people, might not necessarily speak English, and just a variety of reasons. I think it is on the Human Relations Commission for these people to really publicize, make it known what resources are. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Vice Mayor Lynn Sell.
Hi. you mentioned. Yeah, thank you for intervening. You mentioned that your roles in public service have not only allowed you to advocate for those whose voices are left out, they've also given you practical insight to identify opportunities for structural change. Mm-hmm. So what, from your experience, from your other organizational experience, do you think most beneficial to bring to this commission?
I think my understanding of policymaking and how policy is enacted and what that looks like, we can so often we go into these types of positions with ideas of what we would like to accomplish, and reality is usually somewhere in the middle. I think my experience in working in government and having seen policy enacted is going to be beneficial for me to not only work with my fellow commissioners, but the city council and advise them on what we could be doing differently.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Cisneros.
Thank you so much for applying and reading your application. Super interesting, exciting for me. I ran for office as somebody who grew up in Sunnyvale, mm-hmm. who is still a renter in Sunnyvale, will likely be a renter forever, considering how things are going income-wise. And so I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. I know we talked a little bit about that, but mm-hmm. we know that that's a challenge
yeah.
generally in our community. When you say that, this might be an issue for marginalized communities, renting specifically, we know that it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's fact of who rents, who owns in this city. We can look at that data and we know that that intersection exists. Now, neighborhood associations and some of those more formal institutions, there's a level of distrust
mm-hmm.
in interacting with government, as I'm sure you've seen in your roles as a field rep,
mm-hmm.
Culturally. That's a challenge that is hard to overcome in many of these communities. How have you approached that before, and what have you learned in working with some of these communities, with some of these individuals who do have that immediate distrust? How do you bridge that?
I think the number one way is compassion, understanding where these people are coming from, and you know, trying to understand their background. I think that's the number one. I don't want to call it a guiding principle, but that's what I try to bring with me to my job every day is compassion. You know, kind of going back to what you were saying, that there is a distrust of these more formal organizations from marginalized communities. I think there are ways that we can still reach out to them, though, whether it be through school. You know, people pick up their kids, drop off their kids. That is another way. There's a divide in the educational gap as well. That is another area that I think could be addressed. And sorry, I just lost my train of thought. But I do think that that is another area that we can tap into and reach out to people and let them know what resources are available.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Next is Councilmember Mellinger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and thank you very much for applying to Siolkowski. So one of the things that you cited in your application, in observing the Human Relations Commission specifically, I noticed that the work plan often lacks the specificity needed to clearly understand what actions are being taken. For instance, during one meeting I attended, the community needs assessment was reviewed, but there was little discussion about how the findings would translate into action steps. Could you talk a little bit about the changes you'd like to see to help and how you think that the commission and the city could be doing better in that regard?
Yes, I think my perspective on that comes specifically from a constituent perspective. You know, coming and attending the meetings and listening and reviewing the work plan, it's not really clear on, like, you know, I said in my application, how that's going to break down. I think that there needs to be more opportunity for constituents to hear from, if not just the commission, various parts of city government as to, you know, what this means and how we can break down these barriers of understanding. I think, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to explain it in as much detail as someone who actually works in government might, you know, like, but I do think there's a way for us to convey to people, you know, what they're voting for, how this is going to affect them, and how they can use the services that will hopefully come from these policies that are going to be enacted.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Srinivasan.
Yes. Yeah, but anyway,
sorry, yes.
Yeah. So thanks for applying. It's impressive you have worked with the federal government, a state assembly member, and then now the supervisor. So for the question, what do you think major equity challenges facing Sunnyvale community? You said digital access gaps. That's one of my favorite topics. So can you what are the steps we can take to close that?
Sure. I think one, let me touch on what I meant by that. I think digital access gaps could look like schools not having access to technology. Obviously, this is a very tech-savvy area, and there is technology in all of these schools, but the level to which it might change from, you know, city or from parts of the city. So in North Sunnyvale, it might not be as centered as it would be in other parts. You could also say the same for households. I think everyone has a cell phone nowadays, pretty much. Everyone needs an email. You need it to apply for a job. But the ability to afford internet and dollars and keep all of that up is still something that people struggle with. And I think that that's something we can touch on. That's another area of equity. Specifically, my thought was with relation to schools. How can we bridge this gap so that kids all over the city are getting the same resources, the same access to technology, at least in the classroom?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So that's all the questions for this evening. Everybody's yes. So Ariana, I just want to thank you for your interest. A final decision by council will be made next Tuesday, so 12th. You don't need to be present to be chosen. City clerk will get back with you later that week with the final result.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too.
City clerk.
It's not yet here. I suggest council take recess.
Okay.
Don't need to tell me twice.
5 minute recess. go ahead and reconvene. City Clerk, we're ready for our next applicant.
He is going to interview David.
Okay. Welcome. Good to see you again. Let me give you a quick overview of the process. We have about 15 minutes for the interview. Every council member will get a chance to ask you a question. And so when you're answering, keep that in mind. I'm trying to keep that track of your time to some degree. And first up is Council Member Lay.
Thank you so much for applying. The application is a little bit not clear on this. It asks if you've been to a council mission or commission meeting, a council meeting or commission meeting. Which of those have you attended?
I've attended both.
Okay. Yeah. And so are you aware that BPAC is one of our more spicy commissions?
5 hours less.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm stealing a question from one of my colleagues, but I think it's an important one. BPAC, I was the liaison with the last year. So I, knowing that it's one of our more interesting commissions, what are some of the ways that you think you would be able to handle that, that your previous experience would in other things would help you handle that? And what are the things that you think were done well in handling that or that you could do better?
Sure. Yeah, so I actually had a very recent experience with this where one of my friends hit a bollard that was in Sunnyvale and on her bike. And so we created a presentation and she came and she wanted to speak, but the meeting went so long, just like the study part of it, that she didn't have time to speak. She waited 2+ hours in the commission meeting. She had to go back home, prepare for the next day. And then we all went back home with her and then we attended on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And she has 3 minutes on Zoom. And so if you think about, we want the commission to be a community-driven effort, but if you make it so difficult for the community to speak for just 3 minutes and it costs a community member 4+ hours to speak 3 minutes, then it kind of deters the community from and contributing more. So I was thinking one of the things that we can do that's like a low-hanging fruit immediately is to have public comments at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so that encourages more community initiation to come forward and speak. And that also shows by our actions that we do care about what the members have to say, and we don't require 4+ hours commitment just for a 3-minute slot. So that's like one of my thinking. I know you were asking about my previous experiences. I run operations at different startups, and so I have an eye on is like, how can we make the infrastructure system more efficient? And if the end goal is XYZ, let's say in this case, more community members contributing, then how can we make it easier for that end user to do that? Cool.
Yeah, thank you. And this is outside the scope of the interview, but please have your friend put in an Access Sunnyvale request or like...
Oh, yes, we did. Okay, yeah, and my mom got hit by a car last week while biking, so I will be submitting one as well. So, yeah, this is I'm very passionate about biking. I encourage everyone to do so, and there are lots of issues that we can fix.
Thank you. I'm up next. First, just thank you for your passion about biking. As far as the issue that you mentioned, it's actually being fixed. You know, I sat through a board chair and commission vice chair meeting last week, and that will be fixed for future meetings.
Yes, great.
So we start that public comment before, as opposed to after the 2 study sessions that we back at, that won't happen again. And I was going to ask a different question, but I'm more interested now in your mom was hit on a bicycle. What part of the city? What issue did you see from that standpoint that caused the accident?
Yeah, so it was Sunnyvale, Saratoga, and California Ave. So that corner of Murphy Park. And I had a neighbor's friend get hit at the exact same intersection a month ago. And so that obviously, like, repeated incidents in the same intersection shows that there are some infrastructure improvements that we can make. It is an unprotected left turn for the motorists, and it's also a protected or not unprotected bike lane, but still a bike lane nevertheless. And so I think it creates this false sense of safety for the cyclist to be on a bike lane when they know that when there is an unprotected left that motorists are taking.
I was thinking about how we can improve the situation. I know that there are some, you know, like bike safety education programs that used to happen at different schools, may or may not still be happening. I'm wondering if there's an opportunity to do so with like driving schools as well. I don't know what their biking curriculum is for like student drivers, but if you think about the education like pathway for someone who doesn't know how to drive until they get their driver's license, like what is that system that we can improve upon? And that's where we can probably like get the most bang for our buck in terms of improving bike safety and pedestrian safety for motorists.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thanks for the ideas on how to do more outreach and things that feature in your application. Next up is Vice Mayor Sal.
Hey, I like to see how people's experience with other organizations, what talents you bring from that to this position. So what is some organization that you're involved with outside of kind of semi-related to this that you could bring the characteristics that you could best bring to this position?
Sure. So in my day job, I run community programming. And so I'm always thinking about how do we bring more people together to achieve a common goal. And outside of my day job, I host block parties, and I'm going to host one tomorrow that hopefully also see Larry back. But I'm always thinking about how do we bring people together? How do we make systems more efficient in terms of like creating operational playbooks or repeating things that work and iterating quickly so that we can figure out what doesn't work and then we can, you know, improve that. I would say that, you know, both on my work side, but also just my passion around community programming and operations, I hope to contribute that to the council or to the commission.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Cisneros.
Yes, thank you so much for applying and for your passion around cycling. So my question was stolen, so I'm going to steal another question.
So this is like the white elephant of council interview question. The BPAC also includes pedestrian. That's a really important infrastructure consideration. I didn't see that mentioned too much in your application, so I wanted to get your perspective on how do we, as we're building out this really great bike infrastructure, how do we also then put the pedestrian, like how do we consider pedestrian access in those plans as well? Because the bike pedestrian interface is less talked about. It's also still dangerous. And I don't know if you saw what we were talking about, like with the Tasman Drive, like that bicycles and pedestrians being too close to each other, that causes anxiety and has an impact as well. So how do we focus specifically on pedestrians?
Yeah, thanks for asking that specific perspective, because I know I enjoy biking a lot, but recently I had a lot of experience as a pedestrian because I was pregnant and I could not bike. And so I had to walk everywhere. And now I walk a lot with my baby in a stroller, and I always think about how scary it is for my stroller, for my baby to be in front of me. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm crossing an intersection, a car doesn't see me, it's actually not me who's getting the first impact, it's my baby. So I have been thinking about pedestrian safety a lot recently. And I do think that there's opportunities for us to create just like more of a walking culture in general. I do think like the vibrant downtown is a really great example of like, oh, when we close like all of historic Murphy Avenue, we can have these pedestrians come in. But then what about like the streets Evelyn, you know, when they're coming from the Caltrain station into historic mm-hmm. Murphy, there is that crosswalk that has the like lit, you know, the lit pedestrian walkway. And I see like some cars are more respecting of that than others. Whereas for the intersection that I live on, it's a pretty fast like through street is Washington. So like right off of Washington Park is Washington. And I was talking with my neighbor, David Kesting, who
putting a study, like he did a petition about like doing a study on that street, which is so important because as a driver, as a pedestrian, as a cyclist, every time I cross that intersection, there is a blind spot with all the cars, and then all the cars are coming in at, it's 25 miles per hour, but they're not really respecting that. So I do think there's a lot of like opportunity to like create more of a walking culture and also like do more like street studies to show which intersections are very heavily trafficked by pedestrians and yet are unsafe for pedestrians to be crossing.
Interesting. Thank you. And Washington is was a major inspiration behind the revamping of the traffic calming process the city has in general. Great. It was big inspiration, so looking forward to getting that one done.
Great.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Munger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and thank you very much for applying as you. So before I get into my question, I will say that the budget this year includes funding to install a left turn signal at California and Sun. That is, I don't know the timeline on that, but we did budget it. So on my question, before I served on council, I spent 3 years chairing the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Commission. And something that was a major focus in my time there was repairing a relationship between the commission and staff that I felt substantially broken down. And over the years, there has been quite a bit of tension in that relationship. It waxes, it wanes. So my question for you is, how would you work to ensure an effective collaborative relationship with staff, especially in the context of the various limitations in what would be your role serving on an advisory commission, limitations in terms of budget, in terms of staff time, in terms of council?
I see. So I will say ahead that I am not familiar with how the staff liaisons with the commission members. Mm-hmm. I look forward to finding that out. And I am very motivated to create a good working relationship with everybody on the commission, as well as with staff and with the safety officers that come and present.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that this is like a village kind of work. Like, we can only do so much as a commission. We need our advocates to also like share the vision that we have. And then, you know, like to have very much like equal conversations that go both ways in terms of like what needs to be done and what are some of the feedback that we've gotten from the community. So I would imagine creating a good relationship with staff means at the very least getting to know them as people. It sounds like you would have ones like it's like the same staff that's assigned for at least a period of time. So like saying hello to them, like getting coffee outside of the actual commission meeting. Because then I do find that sometimes what it seems like a contentious comment is actually just like some misunderstanding. Maybe you do have a foundation of like, okay, Richard, like I know you as a person, and I know that you love bikes, and I love bikes, and we share a common goal like behind this contentious issue, then we're more motivated to work on the issue together. That's my take on this. But if I knew like what the exact contentious relationships are, I would be able to speak more specifically to how I solve it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Srinivasan.
Thanks for applying. I really enjoyed your application,
okay,
especially to the question of city improvement for education and safety programs. You said there could be a challenge for transportation safety and street safety. Then the winner gets to meet and greet or share a fiery park ride with the mayor.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
I'm glad you're into it. Yes, I think that's awesome. Like, people love a challenge, especially when it's in Silicon Valley. We have a lot of competitive people. And so, and people love free rides and people love the mayor. So,
So I had a question regarding your thoughts on ABT, active transportation plan.
Mm-hmm.
You said that you would like to
see some kind of incentive for carpooling
mm-hmm.
from employers and schools.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give a couple of examples? Or,
yeah, for sure. I remember reading that part of the ATP and thinking like carpooling is actually a big opportunity missed here, because you know we talk about okay, how many people drive, how many people walk, how many people bike, but if you are able to like carpool with your neighbor, then you're already saving, you're cutting your carbon footprint in half. And you know, if you share a car ride, then you get to have conversations about your life, and that actually forms really strong friendships as well. So I was thinking we can look at some of the big employers here, and Databricks is one that just came into Sunnyvale. So that could be, you know, like you're already starting a conversation, there's already a lot of fanfare. So you can start with Databricks, you can talk to Uber, and then some of the bigger ones around, like, I don't know, Intuit in Mountain View, like NVIDIA, like Google campuses, LinkedIn. And you can say, hey, like, there's always a sustainability month. There's like Earth Day, sustainability month. There's always budget assigned within these corporations to encourage the employees to be more sustainable. Why don't we partner with them and create a carpooling program where if they are able to carpool with a colleague, then they get like, I don't know, a punch card or something. You know, like it's fun for people to work towards a common goal, especially if they're going to work already. And sometimes people are looking for making friends. And if they don't have that much time, they don't want to create like a brand new routine to make friends, then they could still go to work and do it in a sustainable way and make a friend and get a punch card.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Chang.
Thank you. Thank you for applying. Thank you for reading the ATP. And one of the things you mentioned that was that you want us to help, you know, for our goal of getting 10% of commuters as cyclists, and that the 2017 number of 1.5% is disappointing. What would you like to see more of to encourage making that change?
Yeah, so when I graduated college, I moved to Montreal for a few years, and Montreal is a very bike-heavy city, and that's actually where I started commuter biking, because partly because there was culture there, and partly because there were lots of good infrastructure. And what I saw is, you know, parents with their children in the back, or like, you know, panniers in the back, and so they could bike to the grocery store, they could take their kids from and to daycare, they could bike to work. And when I think about how close we live to a lot of the grocery stores, a lot of the offices, there's like such, like we have perfect weather here, it's so flat in Sunnyvale, there's just like such an amazing bike culture to be grown. And we don't have it yet, but like, we have like the perfect like God-given nature already to make Sunnyvale a really amazing bike city. So that's what I think the opportunity is and how we can achieve it. We can have more bike rides. I moved from San Francisco down to Sunnyvale, and we always in San Francisco do this Friday bike night, and we meet at the ferry building, and everyone will show up with their bikes, and people like deck their bikes out with lots of speakers, and sometimes like someone will have a parrot on their shoulder in San Francisco. I don't expect parrots in Sunnyvale, but we'll see. Okay. And we bike around the city, and it's so fun, and it creates this culture of, wow, I'm like, biking is fun, I'm not the only one doing it, and you can make friends while doing it. And if I have questions about biking, there's always other people that I can ask. So I do think creating more group bike rides can achieve that effect. And then also partnering with the various biking nonprofits around, like the Silicon Valley Bike Coalition. They do a lot of, you know, like bike safety, work on your bikes. I know the public library will host, like, you know, repair your bike days. And so there is an opportunity for us to say, hey, yes, you're interested in a bike ride to the farmer's market. Great, let's get started there. If you can bike to the farmer's market, where else can you bike to? Can you bike with, like, can you attach a carrier to the back and bike with your kid? Okay, you're too scared to do that. Okay, let's try something different. So there's always, like, if there's even a little bit of interest in a bike ride, then we can capture that interest, then we can grow it. It's
through various community efforts.
Thank you, Dee, for going through the process tonight. Yeah. Council will be making its final decision a week from tomorrow, so the Tuesday the 12th.
Thanks.
You don't need to be at the meeting to win. But the city clerk will get back with you later in the week with the final results.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much for your time, everyone.
Have a good evening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. City clerk, we're ready for our final applicant. Hi, David.
Hello.
I'm Sunnyvale Mayor Larry Klein. Thank you for applying for the Human Relations Commission. Each council member will have a chance to ask you a question over the next 15 minutes, although you're our last applicant, so try to keep the time in mind, but you're the last one for tonight. So as you're answering those questions, try to, in general, keep in mind approximately 15 minutes for this interview. I'm up first, and you know, I just want to talk a little bit about, you were talking about, you know, the diversity of our community and how we support those diverse communities, which is one of the goals from HRC. What do you see the best way to break down some of those barriers?
I think it's access to services is kind of the biggest thing. I think that's one thing that Sunnyvale does well relative to even places other folks. We do a good job of kind of making sure that we're not just you know, making services available in the areas that are inconvenient or, you know, still leaving up barriers to access. Our library is fantastic, right? Some of the programs that we have, I was there last week listening to give a talk, right? The history of society has really great stuff there. You know, and that's one of the things where I think it's really just that focus and understanding that services are only as good as they can be used, right? So I think that's one of the things that really sort of sets Sunnyvale apart. And that focus is one of the things that kind of led me to want to apply.
Okay, thank you very much. Next up is Vice Mayor Self.
I like to see how people's outside experience brings attributes that they can bring to this mission position. And you said I hold a master's degree in international policy and governance, which is focused on human-centered policy and technology. Mm-hmm. So what of your outside activities do you think that's attribute you could bring to this role?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm kind of a policy monk, and it is tends to be more policy. That's been reflected in kind of my career, as in, you know, I started out working in higher ed, doing, you know, software delivery out to every county in Michigan as part of the Michigan State University system. And then being able to look at how policies are being developed and then what the impact of those policies is going to be and try to anticipate that. But one of the things I learned over the years of doing policy and implementing it and then like being on the receiving end of here's the thing we need to do is that it's always a moving target. And we have to be able to say, this is what we think the policy is going to do. So we'll aim in that direction and we're not going to hit it. But we have to be ready to then correct and make adjustments to both the policy and our reaction to it in real time and have those things sort of operate in kind of a dance with each other. The work I do today at the Center for Internet Security is very heavily based in getting cybersecurity services out to underserved communities. So we don't do a whole lot with places in California that are, you know, pretty, doing pretty well. But we do things where state of Texas, for example, says you have to have NIST certification for cybersecurity. So then we go and we say, okay, how do these smaller school districts, how do they get to compliance and how do they get to it quickly with the least amount of resource expenditure and the least amount of capital expenditure to get to that compliance level and demonstrate that they're doing what they need to do and then also allow them to take like their next steps to be even more secure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Next is Council Member Cisneros.
Hello,
Thank you so much for applying, and super interesting to read your application. And I want to call out one piece here that I think is particularly salient. You mentioned how Sunnyvale, we do a really good job celebrating diversity, but there is more going on in the world, policies, laws, actions taken by government bodies that are certainly not this council, but that will affect our residents, especially those from marginalized communities, in really profound ways. And you mentioned defensive measures. On the Human Relations Commission, I see this as a really big opportunity for that commission to help us understand what do we as a city need to do for people in our community that may be affected by decisions made by the federal government, for example. So do you have any thoughts on what some of that can look like from seeing other cities or anything that comes to mind right away?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, the concept of human rights cities is really powerful, and looking not just in the U.S. but outside of the U.S. for how different cities are facing those challenges, because ultimately authoritarians exist all over the place,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of places that have been dealing with authoritarians a lot longer than we have. And I think it's important to look to those places to say, how have you been able to use what you have resource-wise and your communities to strengthen the core of the community? It's a lot of times, especially I think in the U.S., that authoritarian nature is definitely coming from outside. It doesn't reflect the nature of the community here and in most places in the U.S. And I think it's going to fall to cities to counter that in a way that is really sort of being defensive of what it means to be that community in a way that is resilient and is proactive in terms of putting up the guardrails, making sure that we're doing the things we need to do to not just protect our folks, but to make everybody feel safe. So it's not just I'm sending a strongly worded letter, right? It's we have to actually have meaningful action as well.
Yes, the feeling of safety is in many ways just as critical as actions,
yeah,
actual safety. Absolutely. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Mellinger.
Thank you very much for applying, Mr. Beaudoin. So you mentioned quite a bit in your application about things like data protection, privacy regulations, et cetera. You know, the city has recently installed block license plate reader cameras. We've been discussing a drone as first responder program. At the same time, there are any of these programs, there are concerns about resident safety and privacy, especially given the inhabitants in the White House. What is your perspective on how the city should balance the need for public safety and providing other critical services with the need to protect resident privacy?
That's a really interesting question. So I think that there's aspects of that you know, commit to itself for the way that we've already structured our public safety systems, right? That we don't have a traditional police officer, we have safety officer. We have a little bit more of a liberal approach to that. And I think that has to extend out. So a lot of it comes down to transparency.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to responsibility on the part of people that are going to be owning those systems, that are going to be dealing with that, whatever that access is that it looks like. And then I think it also comes down to being able to look at what are the statutory requirements that we have to meet. And then what are the things we don't have to do that we can not do to protect our folks, right? So
mm-hmm.
if there's a statutory requirement for data retention, not retaining data beyond, right? Or anonymizing data, right? Mm-hmm. Doing those sorts of things where we can really kind of customize that experience to what the community needs. Because I think that's part of the problem is that we have something like a Ring doorbell where it's off the shelf, it's very easy to install, and now any sheriff in the U.S. can request all of that video, right? That's problematic because it's not customized to that user, to that use case. So that kind of falls onto the city in a lot of cases for those sorts of things.
And I think part of it is also educating our folks so that the people who live here understand what those risks are and they really understand what the benefits are of something like a drone first responder to be able to say, no, I'm not going to be freaked out by this because I understand the use case of it. I understand where we've drawn lines around privacy and around security. And I'm securing that as a representative of my local government, not as some sort of weird big brother eye in the sky. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Council Member Srinivasan.
Thanks for applying. I checked out the Digital Game Museum website.
Yep.
It's interesting. I didn't see your photo in the photos.
Oh, there's, I think a group photo.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah. So, but anyway, it's an interesting website. Then thanks for answering Council Member Cisneros' defensive measures. One of my questions. I'm interested in cybersecurity. You said you provide for underserved community, especially schools. One of the things I learned recently is State of Ohio is coming up with the Ohio Collective, which brings in all these entities under one umbrella for cybersecurity. So I would like to hear your efforts in cybersecurity.
Yeah, so I think that's a good approach. I think that, especially given back to kind of what we talked about in terms of the federal government, you would generally expect to see a couple of localities, a couple of states start to pass regulation, and then the federal government say, there's too much fragmentation, let's put a box around this. That's not happening. And I honestly don't see it happening with the current administration. That's just not how they roll. So it's going to start falling to states, right? You already have, California has fairly strong data protection, data privacy laws. You're starting to see them pop up in other locations. We're past the point where I would expect there to be some sort of federal backing. You do have things like NIST 800 that are more generalized, but those are not really customized to education. So where a state can step in and say, here's the standard, that's better than the government saying it, federal perspective, it's probably even better at the county level, right? It's probably better at the local level because really understanding the needs of the community and understanding the risks that that community faces are where you're gonna really see kind of the rubber hit the road when it comes to cybersecurity. That said, it's very expensive. So the state being able to say, here's a framework, follow this framework that gets you 80% there. I think that's a really good model, especially if the state is allocating funds to help offset the cost of, you know, whether it's, you know, IPS, IDS services, EDS services, right? Some of those kind of off-the-shelf things that your average small school district or local library IT person isn't going to have the resources or training to manage, right? And then also getting them access to things like security operations centers, where they can kind of offload some of that cybersecurity lift in terms of like a response. And I think the other place you'll see that start to spring up very heavily is in public safety. And then I think with the World Cup, especially in our area, that's going to increase the general cybersecurity risk in the Valley here significantly, because that's going to be a high profile event. It's going to raise kind of that attack surface. And I think it's going to be both important to look at what are the risks around some of our public services, but also be able to provide recommendations from the local government to small businesses to say, hey, you know, it might be worth, you know, in 2026, looking at investing in a firewall, right? Looking at, you know, doing the protective DNS service. Something, right? If you're running Wi-Fi, doing those sorts of things and being able to provide those playbooks, I think is really strong. And when it comes to cybersecurity, it really is sort of it has to be a holistic approach. You know, rising tide will lift all boats, because if you leave any sort of gap, it's
one of the things I learned is, when we talk about cybersecurity, we talk about IT cybersecurity, but utilities are still running Windows 95 on some system.
Yeah, and OT is going to be a big thing too. As those endpoint devices start getting more intelligent, right? Like the what was it up in Palo Alto where people were hacking the crosswalks to spread like to just broadcast messages. I think I was actually out at the Baylands last year, and one of the crosswalks was just saying like, "Ready for system update? Ready for system update? Ready for system update?" You know, so like those devices are now part of an attack surface against potentially the entire community. So yeah, it's going to be very important.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Chang.
And you spoke a little already about the measures, but what other programs or events would you like to see?
I think there's a lot of potential educational programs that can help, especially based in kind of the history of our area. One of the things that we did a lot of at Digital Game Museum was working with kids so that they understood sort of the history of Sunnyvale as what kind of where video games started. And that extends out to like some basic coding, making sure that they understand like what the museum process looks like and what the artifacts look like, so that they can better contextualize what's going on. And I think that you can take that same model, apply it across the and say, you know, we're gonna look at the history of diversity here. What does it take for a city to go from something that was fairly pastoral 3 years ago, with lots of fruit orchards, you know, to what we are today? What does it take for a community to do that? How do you bring in so many different communities and have them come together while maintaining their individuality and create this like cultural of a city? Right?
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Lane.
Thank you. This is a really engaging interview, and I really appreciate your thoughtful answers to these questions about digital security and also the answer just now about that's Member Chang's question. I didn't know we had a digital games museum. I think that's really cool. Are you guys still active? Do you take insurance? I have a 10-year-old.
So we were kind of ran over by putting a new campus, and our lease cat basically ended because they wanted to turn the park we were into some high rises. So we don't have a physical location. We're purely digital right now. And then we have a couple of storage units.
And are you still doing school programs?
No, we haven't in a few. We haven't since COVID. It's been really tough. It's been hard because not having a physical location makes it tricky. Mm-hmm. But then also the volunteer situation,
yeah,
it ebbs and flows. So if the job market's doing well, there's no volunteers. there's more people around to come and volunteer. We do try to do events. We didn't go this year, but generally we go to Cal Extreme, big video game show that they do at the Santa Clara Convention Center. We've been involved with Further Convention at San Jose. That's a fun one. So sick. And then occasionally, we haven't done in a few years, but we'll go up to like GDC up in the city, Game Developers Conference, and do displays there and kind of do engagement with some of those folks. That's a nice one because we do get a lot coming from all over. They kind of come in and be like, yes, you can make games, but have you actually ever seen like a Vectrex?
Yeah.
Most of them haven't.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, my question was going to be about the educational programs that you did through the organization, but I think you already answered that.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, we would basically bring kids in and we take a box of donated artifacts and we teach them to accession. So it's really going through and being able to say, what is this thing? What is the condition of it? How can I identify it? How can I make those critical decisions where I don't, you know, we would always tell them, like, you're not sure about something. Well, write it down. Don't go to Wikipedia and try to look it up, because you should be the source for Wikipedia, right? This is the opposite of that model. You know, and it was always very interesting because you'd hand a kid, you know, a box of floppy disks there.
Yeah.
These are real.
kids now in the digital age, where do you go without Wikipedia? Like, right. this idea of being the sort of the best.
Yeah.
Modern sound, nobody would ever heard.
Yes. Yeah.
And thank you for your interest. Thank you for interviewing you. A final decision can be made by council a week from tomorrow, the Tuesday, the 12th. You don't need to be part of the meeting when we're making our decision, and the city clerk will get back with you later that week. Final decision. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
have a great evening. Much.
Yeah,
have a great evening. Thank you. And this will conclude our board and commission interviews for the night. This meeting is adjourned at 8:01 p.m. Thanks to all of our applicants and everyone who participated. Good night.
All right.